Make sure it's working. My name is Isabel Tuning. Today is March 21st, and I'm here with Mr. David McCorkle. Mr. McCorkle, could you tell me your full name?
David Eldred McCorkle. Man, I ain't seen that for years.
Oh, your ring.
Ann brought it in here. She wore it most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I ever wore it much.
Well, can you tell me a little bit about when you came to Brownsburg? Were you born in Brownsburg?
I was born in Lowell, West Virginia. Dad was general superintendent of Wynoak Coal and Coke Company. And the unions. It was a pretty rough time for mine management and owners in West Virginia. And the unions. Dad ran what they called a good mine operation. The miners had electricity and water in their homes, and they weren't prone to join the union. So we went from Wynoak to the West Virginian Hotel about 1930, and then we were there a couple of years, and then in 1932 we came to Brownsburg for the good of both of us, a place to live, and we looked after a great aunt and uncle, Eva Lee Strain and John Madison Strain. They were single, and Aunt Eva had a leg off. She had lost it from an infection, and so we stayed there until they both died. Uncle John died first, and then Aunt Eva, I was the babysitter, and she, she read Latin. She loved Robert Louis Stevenson. She read that, and Shakespeare.
And how old were you at that time?
Well, when we came there, I was about 9. And I had, in West Virginia, it was the change, because I had Italian nurses. I spoke Italian before I spoke English. Well, they were guards, because the union wanted the children of the owners and operators so they can make them unionize. So I'd come back to Lexington to visit the granddad's home, Uncle Morton's, and I'd always be looking around for Jim or Antonio, because they weren't there. But when I came to Virginia, I didn't have to worry. And so we moved to Brownsburg, and it was quite different. In Bluefield, I had two cousins that was mainly association. Other than that, I was pretty well by myself. But when we came to Brownsburg, why, there were kids my age everywhere. And then we were there 9 years.
Were Jim and Antonio?
They were Italian.
Was there a threat of kidnapping?
No, I didn't get kidnapped because they were all there.
But that's
24
why they were
hours
there?
A day I was with one of them.
Oh.
They were guards. And my exposure with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I've lost all the. When we got to Brownsburg, didn't anybody speak Italian?
No one spoke Italian.
So I went back to English, but it was a great thing that we came to Brownsburg. We were there. I came from the West Virginia schools in 3A. So they said, well, 3A, put him in the fourth grade, which is a jump ahead. Well, I was dyslexic. They didn't know what that was in those days. I just wrote everything backwards. So I took the fourth grade. I think it was Miss Coe. And I conditioned. Well, Mother says, when I went and started the school next year, she said, you take the fourth grade again. Which I was in line, and Miss Trimmer said, what are you doing in that line? And I says meekly, Miss Trimmer, Mother said I was to take the fourth grade again. I conditioned. She said, all right. Of course, the first time I was with a different group, they were actually older than I was. And then I ended up in the grade with Ann and Mary and a different group. But the thing about it was, the teachers, of course, there were, as I said, there wasn't any knowledge of dyslexia, but they kept me in at recess. They kept me, they hammered, no, that's not a D, that's a B. So that was a help all the way through. I thought they were mean, but if I'm fortunate that I ended up there, because, as you know, in that period, Brownsburg was a closed society. I mean, you either belonged to New Providence Church or you didn't belong. And everything operated around the church or the school. And fortunately, this Miss Trimmer was a 2-year graduate at Blackstone. She was a principal, but she could do anything. She taught Latin, she taught English, she put on plays, she made money. And one of the most remarkable people that I ever met. And she worked for summers, finally got her degree. But you didn't really want to ride with her because she wasn't the best driver in the world.
That's one thing she didn't do well.
But, you know, we had baseball and we had basketball, and you didn't dare lose a game.
Where did your family live?
We lived at what we called then the Strain Place. I don't know who. The Strains came there. Must have been just before the war between the states. And Ed knew who owned it before, but I can't remember the name. Of course, the McNutts were on a hill about the same height. I remember we could talk from one porch to the other across the valley, but if you went down in the valley, you couldn't hear. But it was, you know, one of those unique things.
Was the house, did the Clemmer Browns,
the Browns,
that house after
the Browns
your family
when,
did?
When we left, they bought it, and then I guess McClung's have it now. I never talked about it. The house burned. There were two fires going on at the same time. That fire, and then there was a Mitchell that was the Reese place. And I believe their barn was burning at the same time. But I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was before we ever went there. But I never talked about it a lot because it was right traumatic. And then they rebuilt with the same walls. And what I couldn't figure, in Mr. Jones's book, he talked about everybody. He talked about Beale and McCorkle, that they were up out of Lexington, and everybody else, but David Eldred Strain was his neighbor. He was a doctor in the community. And he never mentioned once the fellow I was named for. That they must have had one of those raw feuds that happened in that community. Hmm. But and of course he didn't mention the war, except he mentioned one time in that book that his son came home with his leg off. But Aunt Eva used to say that a Southerner could not write anything about the period before the war and during the war. But I want to tell you that, well, they talked about the French and Indian Wars and some about the Revolutionary War. They, if you mentioned Reconstruction, you had to back off because fireworks were going to start. Because the Reconstruction really set on the older people around there. They went wild. I know, well, it was another thing. When you went into Mr. Jim Boswell's store, you didn't mention Lincoln. Or you were going out the door, whether you were white or black or any other color, you were going out that door in a hurry, because I don't know what he had such a violent attitude towards Lincoln.
When was your Aunt Eva born?
1861.
So did she have any memories at all?
Yeah, they had memories of it. And my grandmother did. She was older.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they talked about peeling potatoes and keeping the skins and eating the potato to have food. But you see, we have very little record. I didn't know until that fellow that has Teddy Bob Bosworth, I guess, store there, and wrote a book, and I didn't even know that David Eldred Strain was in the Southern Army till then.
And he was your grandfather?
Great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was Samuel White McCorkle from Lexington, a farm on Brushy, at Brushy Hill, not too far from Kendall now. And we used to go up there every weekend. We had a Peerless automobile, which was a big thing. And we'd every Saturday we went up to Uncle Morton's. And along the way, the people would be people standing between there and Lexington, and they'd flag us down, and, well, will you get so-and-so for us in Lexington, or and occasionally somebody wanted to ride. And I remember Dad had a Irish Setter dog, and he would follow us or ride all the way up. And sometimes we'd leave, couldn't find him, and we'd get back to Brownsburg, he was already there.
So you had this car in Brownsburg?
Well, that was Dad's car.
Uh-huh. So you had brought it from West Virginia?
So we brought it from West Virginia. He had Oh, that was the top of the line of cars then. Dad had about 11 over the years. Because, up until what I consider right now is 1928, everything's prosperous. I mean, I remember we'd go on the drive on Sundays, and as far as you could see, there were cars on the road. And of course, after 1929, we were in the up to the 60s before the United States manufactured as many cars as it did back then.
Really?
And of course, the same old roads in West Virginia that we rode on then. Mm-hmm. They've got interstate roads. But, as Ann mentioned a while ago, I guess that Jeff, whatever his name is, says you may be a redneck if your family tree looked like a pole. So I guess he was talking about us.
Yeah, I think, here in the Valley of Virginia, there are just a lot of Scots-Irish people that just, there weren't that many.
People
married their cousins.
And they were close. It was a close society. I remember when we came there, people would say, my mother was from Washington, Pennsylvania. I'd lived up there. I lived all over West Virginia. But they'd say, well, Jenny seems to be all right for a Yankee. Because her dad was English and her mother was Welsh. And but she seemed to fit in all right.
And so your family came to Brownsburg because of the Depression?
Yes. West Virginia, when we left West Virginia in 32, it was the richest state in the Union. And guess what it is today? The poorest. They lost over 2 million people. So mine management people came to the Valley. We've known a number of them around here that were family knew in West Virginia. And that built up the population of the Valley. And kids, it's hard to remember.
That must have been a big change for you then, moving from Bluefield to a small country village?
Not really, because, when you're in that situation, you're by yourself. We used to go to White Sulphur, and I'd be the only kid there. I remember the swimming pool, but I was always in trouble, because they had this big swimming pool, and it was absolutely clear. And I couldn't remember which end was a chalet. I can remember that all of the walls had the war battles in on it there. They seem to be gone today. I don't know why they got rid of them, because they were interesting. And coming to Brownsburg, then there were, around a lot of people my age. When I lived in Bluefield, we lived in West Virginia Hotel, which wasn't in a residential area. So every few months, the principal of a school would discover, well, he's not in the area. We're getting a lot of people moved. Send him down to South Bluefield, and I'd be in South Bluefield for a while. Then they'd send me to another school. I was always on the move because the population was a whole lot larger than in that area. Yet Bluefield was larger then than it is today. by a good bit. And this West Virginia hotel had just been built. So when we left Wynoak, we lived in the 10th floor of this hotel until we came to Virginia.
Was your father able to find a job when you moved to Brownsburg?
Well, he wasn't well. I guess he had one of the... He was, well, to begin with, he was deaf as a post. I was his interpreter for years because other people wouldn't yell as loud as I would. He took care of the garden and other things around there. And then he, about 1937, I guess it was, he had this ulcer and Dr. Leach operated on him and patched him up some. So he wasn't well from there on. And he did things.
Was your uncle a farmer?
Oh,
the uncle that you were living with?
Yeah. They had, the farm started. It was Patterson's then, in next to Brownsburg. It was 400 acres. And until we had to divide sell the place, and because there were a lot of heirs. Some way, this David Elder Strain had bought this farm. He just wanted, so he could drain some land, he didn't pay attention to it, about 120 acres that was there. And they had to pay a lot of back taxes on 120 acres that no one knew they owned. it was a land up next to the camp and all the way into Brownsburg.
The camp?
Well, the...
Briar Hills.
And they swam on the place. There was a swim, a hole there that the kids all came over.
So you owned, your family owned land on both sides then of 252?
Oh, yeah. They're from the church, from right next to the cemetery, to Brownsburg, basically. I used to ride a horse to church and leave it in the woods back to the cemetery and go to church. Sometimes I came up the road and there. And there was a surrey there. I used to go places in the surrey. I was just a kid. But in two occasions, the rule was that if you owned a pet, you had to be able to kill it.
Uh-huh.
And two occasions, I brought these horses in, running them to get back before dark, because I just roamed all over the community from morning to evening. I'd put them away, they'd get distemper, and then Dad would call and say, come on down here,
uh-oh,
kill this horse. And so I don't know, before I was 12, I'd kill two horses because they had distemper. I'd shoot the horse and they'd drag it out. But that was the rule, dogs, cats, or otherwise. Because dogs and cats were animals.
Right.
And they weren't worshipped then. They had a job, they did it, and if they didn't, well, they were goners.
Mm-hmm.
There was very few people that worked animals with dogs along at that period. I finally, working with Angus cows and sheep, found that dogs were a nuisance, because when I was working with them, I'd be 1,000 feet away from the house. I'd tie the dog at the house But those animals knew it was there. And then after I got rid of the dogs, Ann and I could bring animals from anywhere and work with them. No trouble. But that was thing after came here. But but the fortunate thing was that I ended up in Brownsburg. I, with the dyslexic, I still got the scholarship to WNL and one to Bridgewater, which wasn't easy to get in those times. But I never used either one of them because the family, with mother and dad, were poorly. So we came here when I was about, well, just turned 17.
When you say you came here, you mean?
To the farm there.
In Rockingham County?
Yeah, we bought the farm there, and I operated it. And I bought Rockingham Memorial Hospital, I think. Because either dad or mother was in there. Of course, thank goodness it didn't cost as much as it does now, but of course the money was worth more then too. But,
So you basically lived in Brownsburg then from the time you were 9 until you were about 17 or so?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you graduated high school in Brownsburg?
And the thing of it was, that was my education. But as a soil conservationist, I was the fellow they came to find out about something. Because I did have the farm, and I was hired. This one here didn't have to do with Brownsburg, but it had a Brownsburg education. I put in soil conservation on the farm. The farm had huge gullies, and I put contour strips in. There were 26 strips. Well, Dr. Bennett and Dr. Loudermilk came down there. That Dr. Loudermilk had one of the best insights on the effects of erosion in the world over the centuries. And there's still a pamphlet there reprinting on him. But about 3 weeks later, here they came again. And they wanted to see the farm again, they did. And so he went to town and told the district conservationist, which had the area of the valley, to go out there and hire me. So through all the years of working 40 years with Soil Conservation Service, I was Dr. Bennett's boy. So I said what I wanted to say, I did what I wanted to do, and earth shaking like I was at a meeting in the National Forest in the park, and they were trying to figure out what to do with the park and whatnot. It was one of those stages where the budget had been cut, I guess, and it came around to me, and they didn't like my speech. I suggested they cut it up in 160-acre plots and sell it, and that didn't go.
You were a developer from
that doesn't go over well with bureaucrats. they wanted more land, more
right,
land.
Right.
And after that, they did put limitations on what they could buy. But.
And so you graduated from Brownsburg High School.
Brownsburg High School.
Do you remember some of your teachers from?
Oh yeah, sure I would. Of course, O.C. Ellen Trimmer was the number one. I don't know. I sold Coca-Colas through, I don't know how many years there. They had a Coca-Cola box. Occasionally we'd have ice to put in it. But the drink man, every time he came, he gave me 6 bottles. Well, that helped some, and I didn't know we were making anything. But anyway, it bought the football uniforms when it came. That Miss Trimmer was a Class A manager too. She put on plays. She had movies. She would get local string bands or whatever it is, the Weitzels and whatnot, to play and charge you 10 cents, and then I've always wondered, she bought these backgrounds for plays she put on. They came from New York, and they were big, but they were all hand-painted. And I've always wondered what happened to those, because, you know, they had the different scenes and everything, and they were very good. And
were you in any of the plays?
Oh, yeah. Everybody had to be in the play. There wasn't that many of us, you know. You can count them on your hands.
What were some of the plays? Do you remember any of those?
I don't remember the plays. I knew she was very conscientious. When she put on a play, you know, they ordered the books. And when the play was over, if she was going to have it again, she ordered the books again. Because that was, you know, the law. And I couldn't figure it out in the world. Way back there in the boonies, she'd bother about
copyright law.
Copyright law, so religiously, but she did. And then one thing I remember, I worked there for, I don't know, a year maybe or more too, for the NYA.
What does that stand for?
Well, that's National Youth Administration. Well, it seems the government says to, I guess, to Eugene Buchanan and Miss Trimmer, he was the school board chairman, lived there. You either take the NYA, get so many kids on NYA, you're in a depressed area. We didn't know it, but and you've got to get these kids on NYA, or we're going to cut funds somewhere else or do something terrible. And so. She says, you, you're going to make that $6 a month. And I remember one of my duties was sitting on the front steps, and kids would bring weeds up to me, and they'd count them, and I'd...
You mean like dandelions?
Dandelions and things. And I don't know what else, but they had to have so many people on NYA there, or it was the start of the socialist system there, because they...
And so you made money being...
$6 a month.
You had to make $6 a month?
No, I made $6 because of...
Because you were counting weeds?
Well, there were other things that they... You know, it's things you'd do anyway, even if it wasn't there. But the government said they had to have so many people on the NYA.
And was selling the Coca-Colas?
No, that was a money-making school project. I liked it. And that'd be a terrible thing now, wouldn't it? I mean, you know, when recess was going or something else. That's when I was in high school. I was living at the McNutt's for a year there with I can't think of who the one teacher was. I have Alzheimer's bothering me. Ellen Montgomery and Al Lunsford took care of football and chemistry. I guess that's the main thing that he taught. And, but I went in and I went to see him, 8, 10 years ago down in Foley, Alabama.
Mr. Lunsford?
He was from Foley. while I was living there, his dad raised potatoes, and he got this machine, and it was a great machine, digging potatoes and everything. The only trouble was, a year after he worked the machine the first thing, year, he died of silicosis from the dust coming up thing and got him. But anyway, we went down. We thought we'd go see him. We had a daughter at Pensacola, and we went down there and stayed a while. So we drove over there, and we went into a grocery store, restaurant, and whatnot there. And I happened to ask the fellow there if he knew Al Lunsford. Why, sure, he said, that's our superintendent. And I asked him where, well, he said, this is just the problem. He died 3 weeks ago.
Aww,
and they wanted us to go to the over to widow's, but she wouldn't have known who we were or anything.
How was it you happened to be living at the McNutt's when he was there?
The family had moved.
Oh, your family had moved to Rockingham County.
Yeah, they moved. They in the process, they moved there, and they wanted me to finish there.
So I
boarded at McNutt's till
what had happened to your aunt and uncle?
Oh, they died. Uncle John died in about 35, I guess. And Aunt Eva died in, must have been 38 or 9. Then there was quite a few, well, the way the will was, there was quite a few heirs involved. Everybody thought Dad was going to buy the farm, but he had already decided. So, consequently, a lot of people who wanted the farm wouldn't bid. And the Browns got it. They, of course, they weren't from around there at the time. But Dad never put a bid in. I got a big part of it. My education, I'm always considered on the store porch at Soupinger's.
Which store was that?
Soupinger's, right across from Molly Sue.
Okay, it's now the antique shop.
The antique, that's the fellow that wrote the book that he must be a Yankee.
And it was called Soup, it was Soupinger's.
Yeah, Teddy Bob's.
What is it, Teddy Bob?
Teddy Bob was
Teddy Bob's Soupinger.
And of course, his wife was a telephone operator, and her sister. And that was a great, great service too, because they knew everything was going on and where everybody was, and who was out of town, and it was great. And then,
where did the Soupingers live?
Over the bank.
Oh, so the bank was there.
Mm-hmm. And they lived up over the bank, apartments up there. And the buzz was 7 o'clock weekday evenings. The colored of the community would gather for Amos Nandy.
Ah,
He had a radio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had a radio, but it operated on a car battery and would go down, right? So, being from out in the West Virginia and having relatives on the Ohio and Pittsburgh and whatnot, we mainly saved the battery for the news of floods on the Ohio.
Oh, I see.
So, occasionally I'd get to hear Armstrong or some of those series that were on. And but let's see, there was coming into town. Of course, the doctor's office, and then Supinger, and I'm having trouble remembering the fellow that operated the store next to it was a store, and then it was a hardware store, and a Baptist store. I think it belonged to Whipple's. And there was a cobbler. Wish I could remember the name. I don't know what his name was, Potter or what it was. Somebody would know. Of course, there was the Caldwell garage that was busy. And then the bank. And then the Bosworth post office store. Of course, across the street was the Huffman filling station and store. I used to work there just for after school. There wasn't any pay involved. Occasionally I'd get some cheese and a Coca-Cola. I remember we would, as I remember, I think a egg which you shook to make sure it was good, got 22 shorts in exchange.
What does that mean?
22 shells, and these fellows would take those and go out and get their meat. You know, squirrels, there were plenty of squirrels, rabbits, groundhogs. And I think it took 3 eggs to get a shotgun shell. But that was an exchange. And
did a lot of the stores have that barter system?
I think mainly the Huffman. My memory shot.
I think you're doing great.
But the only thing I didn't like about it was taking sprouts off of potatoes in the spring. I mean, there'd be a lot of potatoes down under that building, and I'd be down there knocking those blooming sprouts off.
That was one of your jobs.
The only one I didn't particularly like. And of course, I had an advantage. I've always been a fellow that talked too much. And I'd end up having to copy the Latin book or a history book. No pictures counted. The page had to be off. And I'd get on the counter there and pull the brown paper out and do this copying. You know, 25 pages or so many pages for penalty.
Because you talked in school?
I talked everywhere. I talk in line, you know. We marched from class to class, and you didn't talk. And by the drum, I think there was he was good on the drum. The fellow lived right next to Molly Sue Dunaway. And but we always marched by drum. And Miss Trimmer, some days she'd have to whip probably 10 or 12.
Oh my goodness.
Well, we'd all be in the penitentiary today with the prison system.
I'm going to have to flip this tape over. Okay. It's running again.
You see, Brownsburg was one of two schools in the state of Virginia that were accredited.
Really?
And in other words, when you went to college, you went to college. You didn't have to go through the entrance and everything.
Really?
And no one ever failed in college when they graduated from Brownsburg. And but it was by the book. I guess people have told you, the basketball court was out in this red clay, and when someone was coming to play, Miss Trimmer would have all of us out there just walking our feet up and down to mash that water out of the clay so we could play basketball. And as I say, she was a genius. The other people raised Cain, but she was tough on me. But that was all right. She just hated it when she'd be chewing me out and I'd be laughing. She didn't like my laughing when she was. But the Latin, of course, all the people I worked with were probably tech graduates, VPI. But I had an advantage on them that they couldn't touch because I had Latin. I had been hammered in Latin all the way through. And here these people were working in agriculture and they didn't know the terminology of trees or shrubs or anything else,
right.
But it's all Latin.
Mm-hmm.
And so that puts you way ahead if you have that. I think it's still true today. Maybe a dead language, but we've traveled and stayed we had a daughter that was, our husband is head of APHIS, and we spent a period in Mexico, Chile, Argentina, and I never could pick up in Spanish. But I could always read the menus and everything else to take care of that, as long as it was printed. But
how many years of Latin did you take?
We had 2 years there. Of course, I had on Eva. I don't know.
Well, that's right. Shakespeare in Latin and, with Aunt Eva.
And Miss Trimmer, and she used to say when she started teaching Latin, she was about 2 or 3 days ahead of the pupils. And of course she went out to Aunt Eva and they talk Latin, I guess, because Aunt Eva may have had her leg off, but she never stopped teaching.
She had been a teacher?
Yeah, she taught what's that seminary down? Bellevue.
And that was a girls' school?
That was a girls' school. Mm-hmm. And she taught there. And David Eldred Strain was the doctor at Western State for about 15 years, and she used to talk about going to the dances, but she always would say that the people there were very smart, brilliant.
Where?
At Western State.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And very intelligent. But I guess they were crazy.
And she was Aunt Eva was Dr. Strain's daughter.
Daughter. Mm-hmm.
Then, and she was your
granddaughter. And my grandmother was her sister. And That brought the Dunlaps in, the Strains.
And had your grandparents live there on the farm too?
No, the other side of my grandparents lived at Brushy Hill. They had a farm
in Lexington.
In Lexington, belongs to cousin Mab, Bill McCorkle. That was the McCorkle side of the family, and of course there was the Strain, and there were Dunlaps. They were, and I don't know, they were all mixed up.
Were the Dunlaps from Lexington?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lived out farms on Whistle Creek. They came, but they moved from Slaty Fork. My sister-in-law was one of the Dunlaps, and they owned, well, the base of the mountains. Her father had, he was a postmaster and had a store, and but he had about 400 acres there, and they went to school in Marlington, but then they moved to Whistle Creek, places. They always wanted to keep it just like it was. I said, forget it, sell the thing. So finally, after all of them died, they sold the place, and it's a sub-development now. Mm-hmm. you can't keep it like you dream.
Your grandmother, who was Dr. Strain's daughter,
mm-hmm.
did she get married and leave the farm then?
Well, she married McCorkle, and he had the farm that Bill McCorkle has today.
On Brushy Hill. Mm-hmm. Brushy Hill, okay.
And
Now I'm straight on who's who.
Bill is an unusual fellow. Most of McCorkles don't like music.
He is fabulous.
I don't know where, I wonder about him.
He played at my wedding.
Is that right? Well, Molly Sue played at ours.
She directed my wedding. Mrs. Whipple directed and he played.
Is that right?
She had stopped playing for weddings then, so we had Bill.
Is that right? Well, my dad got so he wouldn't go to church because he'd come home with a headache from the music. Brother was the same way, and I'm saying, I wear earplugs. I can hear. I'm about the only fella here that can hear real well, but I never leave home without these earplugs.
Is that right?
And there's going to be a lot of noise around. Mm-hmm. I put them in because I know deafness is a terrible thing. Dad was like I was. He loved to talk, but you know when you're totally deaf. When we moved here, I had a whole drawer of hearing aids. The fellow would come and sell the, and he would be just as happy for about a half an hour, and then he'd pull that thing off, and that was it. He had a nerve damage.
Sure.
Finally, one of the fellows came by, and he says, "Mr. McCorkle, we can't help you. There's no use you buying this." One honest man. But around here, it would be great to have the concession of hearing aids,
right,
in this place.
Can you tell me a little bit about the aspects of the farm when you were growing up? What was it, a subsistence farm, or sell cattle, or
no? We raised corn. Silos. We mainly bought 3-year-old shorthorn and raised them till four. Then they were shipped here in Rockingham County and fed out and sold. They were big animals. And then, of course, we had sheep.
Were shorthorns a common breed? Or?
Yes, it was then. But if someone had one of those shorthorns today, they'd have a gold mine because it went completely out of existence. There were two shorthorns. One was a beef animal and the other was a milk animal. Now the milk animal, there's remnant, but the beef animal with other breeds coming in just disappeared. But it, the frame and everything of that animal would make a good basis for any any beef animal today. But they couldn't find anyone over there at the McCormick farm. They looked everywhere for it and they never, couldn't chase it down. But of course we raised buckwheat. And the Pleasants were sharecroppers. Uncle Letcher and his son we call Pitt. I'm having trouble remembering his real name. But Uncle Letcher, he owned three houses there in Brownsburg.
And where were they?
Well, you know where they had that tea room?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was one of his houses, the log house.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived in the house right next to it between the Weitzels and...
Oh, on the alley, the one that's...
No, he lived right on Main Street. And then Pitt, oh golly, I wish I could remember his name, lived down over the hill in a house that, that Uncle Letcher owned. And of course Uncle Letcher built, I guess they went to the Presbyterian Church at one time. But he basically built the Methodist Church there. I've been in a long time, but I'm sure the windows are still there with his name in it. And but he was, for that period, he was very prosperous.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly that farm, and then the Wade farm had a tenant farmer. And I can't remember, Ann would remember his name.
And is that the farm closest to the church?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And
and was he, was Mr. Pleasant paid a salary or?
Did no, he was a fellow with the money. I worked for him.
I see.
For a while. And
so did he pay rent or?
He got a share of
the profits
of the
from selling the beef,
right? Well, of the grain and there was wheat. This valley raised an awful lot of wheat and it just destroyed the soil. Here where we're sitting, there used to be from 3 to 5 feet more soil. This is Frederick soil, and the same thing down in Brownsburg. There were four layers, horizons. The top horizon, if you dropped seed in it, you'd have to get out of the way because it's coming back. And the second horizon was right fertile. But the fourth one, which is what we're working on now, is clay and has to be fertilized to raise good crops. There is more soil in Rockbridge County than there is here, though it's the same soil, because that was steep and they didn't farm it as much. And steeper than this.
Mm-hmm.
But here in this county, they just raise wheat, which they didn't do. They raised wheat, but they rotated and didn't lose as much soil. But it's steep.
And what is it about wheat that pulls the nutrients out of the soil?
Wasn't the wheat, it was the erosion.
Oh.
When I first started working, that's another thing that Brownsburg. I was in the sixth grade and I was looking out the window and these fellows were out there. They were laying contour lines between the school and the Methodist Church. And I thought that'd be a good thing to do. And then Mr. Hanna preached a sermon on soil erosion and soil conservation. He preached a couple of them. I mean, I thought they were going to have a hanging. I mean, if we don't have any erosion, hot air would just, she'd be there. Of course, she wasn't in church, but she heard about it. She thought that was terrible. But in the process, I don't know, somewhere I decided I'd like to do that. And I didn't have anything to do with it, but the process of some way, I ended up as a soil conservationist. And I've been in a whole lot of states. I was president of Soil Conservation Society of America, secretary, things like that. I don't know why, when you're dyslexic, you always get appointed or processed to be secretary. And so there's a lot of misspelled words in this. but that's the reason I think Brownsburg was the promised land. As far as I'm concerned, all our family was sent there to this perfect valley. I don't know whether, when they had the 175th anniversary of the Presbyterian Church around in Virginia, I wish one of the fellows that spoke, but he said that they were looking for a warlike Christian peoples to settle the areas west of the mountains to cope with the Indians. And they found these people and they allowed them to come to the valley to pay rent and fight Indians. But they enjoyed fighting Indians more than they did paying rent. When they came in through Philadelphia. And and of course that whole area was involved. I don't know whether you ever noticed it, but in Rockbridge County, it's easily possible to walk from one Presbyterian church to another. And of course, You had shortage of ministry, and of course that involved the area. But the same fellow that was president of Liberty College preached in New Monmouth and Timberridge. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good walker, right? And of course, New Providence have always been big enough that they were one unit. But
then didn't they have Pisgah Chapel and...
Yes, they had, I don't know what they had that, because there were about a couple outposts there. And the preachers all covered that. And, but that was just in areas where the You couldn't walk to the big churches. Actually, you see the division that Old Providence and New Providence, actually they aren't that far away, mm-hmm. if you put it. They had a farm that he got from Mount Elva, joined the McManaway. In fact, he sold to McManaway when they left there and came here. But it was the original string place. I never used to talk about the soldiers, Confederate soldiers would be coming up the road, injuries and sick and whatnot. They would take care of them for weeks and get them back in shape, and off down the road they'd go. There'd be more coming. There was apparently for a good while they were, you know, when the war was over, they would have said, go home. And a lot of them didn't have homes to go to. But she used to talk about David Elder taking care of them. There, that was the road that went in by the Wades, you know.
And well, okay.
Sometime it ended up, Bethel. That's where a lot of the family were buried. But there must have been a road through there because it also owned, there was a strange place, several of them on down that road. And they were buried at Bethel and New Providence. And the names kind of faded from history as far as this area is concerned. But there were a lot of them. There were several of them killed in the war between the states. Eusebius Strain was a brother. His name, he was one of the first graduates in medical school at the University of Virginia. And when you go to the rotunda, walk up the steps, you look up there and here's this Eusebius. Where they got a name like that,
I don't know. That one.
Eusebius Strain is up on the print of the above, around the rotunda there. But that was a brother that was killed. And there was another brother that was a doctor that was killed.
So there were three brothers who were all doctors?
Yeah.
Your grandfather and two of his brothers.
Now, David Eldred went to the Jefferson Medical College in Philadelphia. But the others went to University of Virginia. Apparently the program just started over there.
In Virginia.
Because I was been over there several times, unfortunately. But in looking at the pictures there, that was about the period that the medical school started. I don't know who has it now, we call it the Slusher Place. That was one of the strange places.
Cloverdale?
Is that,
just past the church on 252. Mm-hmm.
And I always talked about it being on Annie's place. On Annie apparently was about that tall. And I never saw her, but Aunt Eva always referred to her like she was right there. And
Well, your Aunt Eva certainly sounds interesting to me.
Well, she was. And of course, that was a task I had. It wasn't necessarily enjoyable then, but that was a pretty good system. The Moors had been there before we. Another aunt and uncle had been there for a period before we came, and they went back just out of Lexington. They had a dairy there, which was the old Morrison place, and which is some more kin folks.
Well, did you have time to play games and have fun when you were growing up, or was it mostly taking care of Aunt Eva and doing chores?
No, I was, a lot of days, I was, as I say, I'd just leave and just roam around visiting people.
Who were your friends?
Well, there was, on one side, there was Sid and Bud Martin. On the other side, there was Ed and Bill Patterson and Sam Patterson and
they were your contemporaries in age.
Well, Ed and Bill were a little older than I was, but Bill and I were pretty good buddies. I used to help him measure wheat for the AAA program. He worked for that.
What was AAA?
Well, that was a wheat program. You could raise. They would, if you'd been raising, say, 30 bushel, while they would, or 30 acres, well, they would measure it and figure out. It was a stupid program. But then they say, well, you can raise 11 acres. Well, if you put fertilizer on there, you could raise more off of 11 acres than you could the 30. So, you know, it didn't do a whole lot.
Because there were wheat surpluses?
Oh, yeah, the terrible. A surplus in everything for some reason. They were, I don't know whether they actually did it, but they were taking pigs out on the old World War II ships and sinking them. And there was just a, I don't know why all of a sudden it was such a service, but you know, 1928, everything was prosperous and farms were prosperous and people were borrowing money. There were farms around there that couldn't pay the interest, but the banks didn't want them because they didn't know what to do with them either, so they just wouldn't toss people off the farm. I guess some of them did, but most of them just kept riding through with no interest coming. It was pretty hard on banks. But I remember Miss Trimmer saying, you don't say anything bad about the bank. You had to be very careful because people, you know, had a terrible time with runs on the banks. And not too many have went out of business. West Virginia banks, there were a good many, but out through the Midwest, they just closed bank after bank. I worked with a fellow, he was county agent in Stafford County, excuse me, and his brother was something with accounts with the federal government, and his first work was closing banks in the West. Mm-hmm. He said they'd open up all the bank boxes and everything, and pile them there, and have an auction, and be gone in 2 days to the next bank. And that involved also the going off the gold standard. But on the whole, now Uncle John had this big box, and he would put the joes and the shoulders and I don't know what all in there. And some of them had been there apparently for years. But anyway, people would come by and say they were out of out of meat. He'd go in, it was all packed in ashes. And they were really drying hard, but I guess they were edible. And he'd dig out a jowl or shoulder, and it went on regularly. That was basically the reason it wasn't as hard around there as other places, because people got food if they needed it. We used to raise sorghum. Of course, half of it went to the Pleasants. And I remember going with them to pick up the pans and everything every year. And the squeezer or whatever it was, the horse would go around and around. And the fellow that owned the pan, I mean, he stayed with it around the clock till it was finished.
And so somebody would bring the pan in?
I don't know who the fellow was. It was, we would go over toward my mind's shutting down. It couldn't have been too far from Rockridge Bay. Fellow lived there, and we'd take a wagon and go haul all the stuff and bring him over, and he'd stay there till they'd squeeze the sap out and he'd boil it down, and there'd be a lot of sorghum, and we'd use half a gallon, but by the time the winter was over, our share had gone. People had the rest of the people there, they ate a lot of sorghum. I never was a big fan of the stuff, and I guess the rest of the family wasn't either, but we raised it every year, and I guess that was the sweetener.
How many acres of that did you raise?
Oh, I think there was probably 4 or 5 acres of. It was a lot. You had to strip the leaves and all that. And I was basically a spectator of that, other than I'd worked the skimming some.
How'd you cut it?
Oh, it was a liquid.
No, I mean, how did you cut the sorghum?
Oh, with a knife or pull it off. No, the sorghum wasn't cut. It was, the stems were just run through the squeeze, the machine that squeezed the
so it went down the
sap out of it.
The machine went down the.
And they'd get in the bucket and they'd pour it in this pan that went. I guess they're still doing it around. I don't know. But the pan was probably 8 or 8 feet long or so. It had dividers in it, and they'd run it all the way through and skim all the foam off of it. It was a fairly complicated process to make good molasses. And I guess they're still basically doing it today, probably have a different thing squeezing it. But then, just about everything that we used, there was a lot of hunting, and a lot of, I don't know why, there was a lot of wildlife there, and that supplied a lot of food to people, I would assume. I never ate a squirrel in my life, I don't know why, but I killed a lot of them. I'd throw them in the back of this Surrey and go into Brownsburg, and I mean, it wouldn't be long until they were all gone.
Did you give them away, or?
Oh, yeah, sure. It was just my sport, spoil kid. rabbits and squirrels, and we never ate them. And then the, what was it, tularema or something came around with the rabbits. I had to be very careful about, you know, there weren't rubber gloves then. And
oh, it was a disease?
Yeah, from the rabbits. And that hurt. There were a number of people got that. And, oh, golly. What did I have on this thing?
When, do you remember, were you still living in Brownsburg when electricity came through?
We didn't have electricity. VEPCO, I guess that's what it was called. There were a lot of poles on the Strain Place, came not far from the house. But Aunt Eva and Uncle John didn't want that.
They didn't
want it. Well, just before Aunt Eva died, she had to have electricity. It had, and didn't get electricity in there. Well, it wasn't in there when we left. We used oil lamps, and Aunt Eva assigned herself as a duty to get in her wheelchair and trim the lamps. And of course, with that house pretty good size, we had a number of lamps. I know I had a little lamp about that big. It's a wonder I didn't burn the place down, because I read three or four hours a night here. But I'd get under the covers with that thing. It's a wonder it didn't suffer.
Oh.
And read.
That does sound dangerous.
And they, of course, my room was a little separated in the back side of the house, so they never got on to that.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had a brother 13 years older. The day I started school at Rhine Oak, which is Loud, another name, it was Rhine Oak Coal Company, he started to BPI, it was then. And he was gone, you know, most of the time. And with that, we were always great friends. He was my big brother. He came up to my shoulder. And he was graduated electrical engineering, but he ended up as engineer on the Nike missile program. And he was in radar during World War II. He went to Harvard first and then MIT.
Mm-hmm.
With a crew, a fellow that brought radar from England, and they perfected radar so they could spot the submarines, which stopped the submarine problem, and which was great. But I don't know how many, he was in the Army for about 5 years. But he was assistant chief engineer of the American Coal Company. And when he came back, he was going to be chief engineer of American Coal Company. They were, and he told Dad, Dad says, no more McCorkles in West Virginia. Find something else. So he worked for the highway department as an inspector or something for a while. And then I took him down to Burlington, North Carolina, to Western Electric. And his wife and I were sitting in the car. He went in for the interview. And we just gotten settled, and a little bit here, the door opened. And it was Bob. I said, what happened? He said, I'm supposed to be here in 2 weeks. Well, in the highway department, said, oh, we wanted you and another thing. But anyway, he went down there. He worked with Bell and Bell Labs and Western Electric. So he was there the rest of his. So he came home a whole lot.
Yes, I just want to make sure that I don't run out of tape. I've done that before.
So how y'all doing? Okay?
Great.
It's almost 12 o'clock.